The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. As we head into hour three, we usually have Brandon Weikert with us covering foreign and domestic policy on Mondays. But Brandon can't be with us today. He'll be back with us next week. Delighted to have George Kaloff pinch hitting for him. George is going to give us some overview and insight on the political landscape. We like to catch up with him every week or so. He is the managing partner at the Resolute Group and the president of Data Orbital. Happy Monday, George. How are you, man?
I'm good. Happy Monday to you, Seth.
Thanks.
Always good to be on.
Yeah, thanks. Good to have you. I don't think we talked since the presidential primary election last week, last Tuesday. And I was curious if you divined anything from it, including is there anything to divine from the fact that it looks like Donald Trump, though without much, if any, competition that I could think of actually on the ballot anymore, got about 100,000 more votes in the Republican primary than Joe Biden did under the same circumstances. I think Joe got 300 some odd thousand and Donald Trump got 490,000 or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. Is there anything to take away from that? Intensity, predictability? Or is it, as they say, just one of those things?
So we always want to be careful. There's a lot of analysis done on primaries, and there are some things to take away. I would definitely say it's not meant to serve as a precursor or some sort of look into the future of what happens in the general election. But I would say I do think that there's an intensity difference, and I think that that makes sense, that base Republicans, so base meaning those that are the most excited and the most sort of strong conservatives, they are most likely to vote in a presidential preference, which makes sense. And the fact that the Republican base is more intense and excited about former President Donald Trump than the Democratic base is about President Joe Biden, that makes sense. Now, the part that was interesting that came out of the results is, and there was some analysis done by someone who I respect and follow on social media that showed a heat map, so a map by the precinct level of the results for the Democratic primary and Republican primary. And on the Democratic side, it was interesting that Biden's worst precincts, you know, we're talking worst by a difference of 5, 6, 7 points, but still less than the average and less than other precincts, were heavily Hispanic precincts, believe it or not.
Oh.
And some of his better ones are the more white, affluent, typical kind of progressive precincts. So that one is an interesting takeaway to see what will happen in the general election, that he did worse in South Phoenix as a percentage of the total vote than he did in let's say, Tempe, a Democratic stronghold, or in other parts of Phoenix. So I thought that was very interesting.
That's what we're increasingly told the Democratic Party has become at a national level, too, if I'm not mistaken. Suburban, college-educated, right?
And white.
And white.
The Democratic coalition is becoming whiter in that, yeah, there's consistent polling nationally and in various states that show that there's a breakthrough amongst Hispanics in general with the Republican Party, particularly with Donald Trump, and interestingly enough, with African-American men, much more so than women. So there was a lot of talk recently and some study, and again, we'll see kind of how the election ends up panning out, that there's a widening gap between men and women that are African-American. So that's another interesting kind of phenomenon nationally that, again, doesn't necessarily apply to what we learned from the primary. But, yeah, there's some interesting kind of divisions happening in what had typically been the Democratic coalition.
I don't love talking in these kinds of categories, but you can't avoid it when you're in politics, particularly in your business, because, you know, you're looking at ways to build coalitions and win elections and appeal to what will build and strengthen those coalitions. So how I do have to tell you, though, I have seen more articles than usual about an African-American or black vote pickup for the Republican Party in this cycle than in the previous ones. How real is that? How much are you sensing that is taking place?
So that one's more complicated, I think, than the Hispanic vote, because that one hasn't necessarily seen material empirical data. So the Hispanic vote, we've seen lots of empirical data. So, you know, what happened in parts of Florida, setting aside the Cuban and Puerto Rican, but what happened in the Rio Grande in Texas, we have seen empirical data to prove that. On the African-American coalition side, that one's a little bit more precarious. But if you think about it this way, if even a 5% shift in the vote, so let's say typically a Republican wins between 10-15 maximum percent of that, let's say it gets up to 20. Well, in a state like Michigan, that could end up affecting the end result, or in a state like Pennsylvania. So it sort of depends on where it's coming from. But even a couple percentage point pickup there could be very interesting, or even if it's greater with men than women. Again, as you noted early on in your question, this is all about sort of how do you get to 50+1%. And for president, it's not nationally. You get there state by state. So you want to do that in the key states, Michigan and Pennsylvania being two critical ones, then, yeah, it could have a disproportionate impact on the race. Or Georgia, for example, another state where there's a disproportionately high African-American population.
Let's stay on Michigan for a second if we can. Do the Democrats have a Michigan problem? Is that what's kind of fueling some of this new language that you're seeing with regard to Israel?
I think that it is very clear amongst those who are willing to look at data that if you see a regression in the African-American vote and you see a larger percentage of Arab Americans who, even if they don't vote for former President Trump, just don't vote at all, when you're talking about a 30, 40,000 vote margin, they are very quickly seeing how it could be immensely problematic. And again, if the Democrats lose Michigan in that regard, it makes and puts the pressure on Georgia and Arizona as being must wins, which are also very difficult. So, yeah, I mean, Michigan had always been sort of the blue wall that they needed in the Midwest, Michigan and Pennsylvania. Ohio had been the swing state. Ohio's no longer swing state, so it makes Michigan even more important. So, yeah, I would say if you're a Democratic strategist, you're worried, and you want to ensure that you don't lose it again. That doesn't mean voters have to move from Biden to Trump, but even them undervoting, industry term, means that they show up and vote, but they don't vote for president. Could be problematic if those folks just abstain from the presidential race.
Yeah, I imagine, and I'm also imagining as I'm thinking out loud with these questions I'm throwing your way, that if you're the Democratic Party, it seems like you have a lot of headaches right now to navigate, because if this is a series of block voting to build a coalition, it's damned hard right now to have Jewish Americans, which is a staple of the Democratic Party, in line and ready and you know, in play for you if you are appealing to the Michigan type sentiments, right? I mean, this is a fracturing coalition, it seems to me, given, you know, this year's news cycle.
So, you know, there's always one truth and constant in politics is obviously there's always a level of tumultuousness. You and I have talked about this quite a bit in the last number of months about how it is absolutely at a peak high. And so this is where, and I'm sort of giving a long answer to your question, is to say, okay, I agree with you. There is a lot of problems on the Democratic side, which is why any sort of problems on the Republican side end up, you know, it's not just the focus. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
If it was just problems on one side, then everyone would just focus on that and be like, oh my gosh, look at those issues. But both sides are having issues. And so, sure, okay, Republicans have drama with this, you know, with who's going to be the next speaker. What does that look like? But then Democrats are having drama with that. And so it makes it so everyone has drama. And so no one can really point the finger at the other. But 100%, the Democratic coalition is seeing struggles right now. And you know, you need to get to 50+1%. That's the name of the game in this line of work, and you need votes. And even if those votes don't go to your opponent, if they don't go to you, you've lost the net vote.
Yeah, I wanted to pick up on that Speaker of the House thing that you mentioned too. When we come back, you're good for a segment or two, a couple segments.
Let's do it.
All right, great. I want to pick up on that and the chaos that we seem to keep being attracted to as a party. George Kaloff and I will do it when we come back. This is our last hour before our event tomorrow night at Arizona Christian University, Fighting for Freedom. Mike Gallagher's in town for it, the radio host, not the exiting congressman. Brandon Tatum and I will be on stage. We'll have some other special guests. You can still get tickets at 960thepatriot.com. Tomorrow night, Arizona Christian University, Gallagher, Tatum, me, and you. 960thepatriot.com for your tickets. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. George Kaloff is my guest. He is the managing partner at the Resolute Group and president of Data Orbital. Yeah, George, you had mentioned the Speaker of the House, and I'm just thinking about going into an election season and the importance of minimizing chaos and uncertainty, but chaos probably more than uncertainty. Why can we just not? I mean, I think we both know the answer. It has to do with individuals. But it does seem to me that whether it's Congressman Mike Gallagher's abrupt exit, whether it's the effort to put more pressure on Mike Johnson, maybe get a vote that puts him out of the race, out of the speaker's chair. There's Lauren Boebert. We just seem to not be able to have our ducks in a row on the year that we need to have our ducks in a row.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's an incredibly high rate of incumbents, both sides of the aisle. But recently, the last number of weeks, Republicans that are not only deciding not to run for re-election, but are deciding to retire.
Yep.
And I think most folks know that we have very tight margins right now in the U.S. House of Representatives. And so when you retire this close to the election, which it is going to be in the scenario of Congressman Gallagher, that you will not be replaced before November.
Yeah.
Which means that that seat is going to be vacant, which means
the margin is worse.
Already,
yeah, right. Our margin
exactly,
is worse. Exactly.
Yeah. The already slim margin is even smaller, which then makes the other part of the conversation about who's going to be the speaker more precarious. I will say the analysis that I'm seeing thus far is there seems to be division. It does not seem that other conservative congressmen and women are in line with what Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene did with that discharge petition. It seems like others, at least as of right now, are not interested in ousting Speaker Johnson, which would be a positive thing, as you can imagine, to your point. You know, more chaos is not good at all. We need less chaos right now. But again, even having a conversation about this gives and adds more fuel to the fire that the left could use to say, look at the Republicans, they're all over the map and they can't agree with one another. And, you know, as we barrel down the road towards the November 5th election.
George, you have polled this. You have managed campaigns over these kinds of things. Again and again, I'm told that the top two issues are the economy and immigration. Is that by and large still true by your lights?
Yes, and immigration being a distant first, first place. And then the economy is in second, but like 20% less than immigration.
Okay.
Second.
So good. By the way, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that they were that far apart. But knowing that makes my question, I suppose, all the more relevant. The efforts to oust Mike Johnson, as it seemed like the efforts to oust Kevin McCarthy, were mostly based on, from what I can tell, arguments over spending, omnibus spending legislation. I understand, obviously, the connection to spending and the economy, but when people talk about the economy, they're not really talking about the deficit, I don't think. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I don't think that's what they mean when they're talking about whether they're going to vote R or D in November. If I'm right, and it's not about the spending as much as it should be about immigration and, inflation, taxes, the high cost of living, high cost of gas, all that sort of thing, why is there such animus over the speaker with regard to spending? Why are they willing to put us into chaos over, at best, a tertiary issue?
So I'm not going to, I guess I am going to.
Yeah, you are.
I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what's in the minds and happening in the halls of Congress, but this is the I think this is what's actually happening. I don't actually think it's about spending or the fact that we're passing spending bills.
Okay.
I would say definitely under former Speaker Kevin McCarthy, it was personality differences. Okay. It was stylistic differences.
Okay.
They wanted a different, the they being the members that voted to ask them, they wanted a different style of speaker. And they had, of course, policy disagreements, but I think the style is more intense. I would say under Speaker Johnson, it very much is, you know, is it could be style, because I don't think there's actually a lot of policy disagreements. I would say if you looked at, you know, Mike Johnson's voting record when he was just Mike Johnson before he added speaker to the moniker when he was just Congressman Mike Johnson, I think his voting record would be almost identical to the members that would have ousted, right?
I'm
which
sure.
Is why he ended up being
no
the consensus candidate, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think it's more about, you know, they want some of the talk out there in the analysis I have seen is, well, you need to be tougher on this, that you cannot cave on this, you cannot compromise on this. Not as much the fact that it is spending. If had he compromised, I don't know, insert some other topic, it would have been about that. It's more about the perception of, are you compromising? Are you giving the Democrats what they want? Or are you standing strong and fighting? And I think that's what the argument's about. That would be my guess versus they're actually truly arguing about spending.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Okay. Well, good. Let me put this question around the party of the opposition, the Democrats. It seemed to me that Joe Biden was trying to rally the nation in early 2022 with his State of the Union message. In 2022, right after Russia invaded Ukraine, he spent so much time and energy and capital and words on Ukraine, trying to unite this country over at least moral support, if not more, of Ukraine and criticism of Russia and Putin. It's funny you just don't hear him talk about, or really any Democrats talk about it at all anymore. If that was an effort to unite and bring together or come together, it seems to have unraveled. What you do hear from the Democrats is nothing about really the economy, nothing really about foreign or defense policy. You hear threat to democracy and you hear abortion. Is that all they're going to be really running on? Are those their main 2 points right now, abortion and threat to democracy?
It sounds like it. And, you know, Seth, I think this is the problem. If they run on the economy, what are they going to run on?
Right.
What positives are they going to run on?
Right.
The coin, you know, the phrase that they coined, Bidenomics, has been now taken by folks on the left and using it as a negative. And
right.
So that's the thing. If you're a Democrat right now who's in elective office, you're someone who's in the White House, you know, I suppose you're getting paid to be very positive in posture and position. But candidly and materially, if you look at the data, the economy is not going well. There's a lot that's dividing us, not uniting us. And so the best thing that they can do is to not run for something, but run against something. And they've chosen to do that, right? So they're running against how, you know, crazy Republicans are, you know, when it comes to abortion, for example, like that's their words, or how bad the Republicans are, not just Donald Trump, by the way, Republicans in general are for democracy versus this is my plan and this is what I want to see and this is how awesome the last 4 years have been, give me four more, because I don't think they can say that materially, right?
Well,
and so they have to find something else to run on.
Let me drill down a little bit with you on the abortion, on the abortion argument and the January 6th democracy argument too. If I can keep you another segment, George, I'd love to. Can I keep you a little bit longer?
Yeah, let's do it.
George Kaloff is my guest. He is the managing partner at the Resolute Group and the president of Data Orbital, and he and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. George Kaloff is my guest, Resolute Group, president of Data Orbital, talking about election things and politics. George, if the Democrats are seizing on abortion and January 6th / threats to democracy and all that, in that rubric as their main campaign themes, let me do a piece of each with you for a little bit longer, if I might. On the abortion thing, I know a pro-choice voter who sometimes votes Republican and sometimes votes Democrat, probably the ideal person for you to put in a focus group, a suburban mom. And she went to a Democratic fundraiser recently, and she said all night, all evening, the entire event was abortion, abortion, abortion. I just walked out thinking, yeah, okay, I'm with them, but is that all there is? Because it's not enough for me. with everything else going on. How common is that? I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, because if it is common, then I think that they have made a hugely grave tactical issue, right, in winning over suburban voters. Because the question, and I keep saying this in almost every conversation on this topic, at least, that comes up, which is swing voters, right, which definitely a suburban woman in Maricopa County is going to fit into that.
Yep.
They have to answer this question. Is my life better today or was it better 4 years ago?
Yep.
And if the measure of success for them is the issue of abortion, then, okay, that's an answer. But if the answer is almost on anything else, I think it's going to be tough to say my life is better today than 4 years ago. And so that's where that question comes back. And so I do think that it's going to be relevant to a lot of people. And then again, I think that abortion very much so activates the progressive base.
Okay.
Very much so. But does it do enough to win over your suburban voter that probably voted Trump the first time?
Yeah,
voted
yeah. Let's call
maybe
them.
Voted for Kirsten Sinema.
Yep. And now let's make them 50 plus. And the reason I say that is because if you're a 50 plus suburban voter, female, and you tend to sometimes vote R and sometimes vote D, and you have now lived through, I guess it would be two election cycles since the Dobbs decision. The one thing you kind of know about it is the sky didn't fall. Everything the Democrats said and wanted you to believe, which was abortion is now outlawed in America, you have 3 years of evidence that that is not true.
Well, yeah, and you have statistics for states that track it.
I was going to get to that, too. Go ahead. You can do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just that there's actually more abortions occurring today than before the Dobbs decision, according to statistics that from the Guttheimer Institute, like statistics from the center left or left, not necessarily from the center right. And so, look, this is the problem with political rhetoric today and dialogue. Everything's about if X happens, there's going to be doom and gloom, or, you know, if X person gets elected or if Y person gets elected, that happens. Right.
Yep.
And that's the problem. It's like, it's not about, it's much harder to cast vision. You and I talk about this often too, to have a leader cast vision of hope for the future than it is to demonize your opponent.
Yep.
And so we are spending 95% of money in campaigns demonizing the other side. No one's really casting a vision for the future. And candidly, President Biden can't pretend to be doing that. The Democrats aren't doing it. Republican, depending on who you are, doing it. So, I mean, that's the problem right now. There's not enough people casting vision. And so that's the thing. On abortion, the talk was very clear. If this occurs, Republicans get elected. Now that the Dobbs decision occurred, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be horrible. You know, in America, you can't access it. But the statistics aren't, that's not how they're panning out.
Okay, well, same thing kind of with January 6th and the Republicans being a threat to democracy, it seems to me. They have exploited it, I think, as best they can. And, you know, I think they've done a really good job on it. On the other hand, you know, we did have a controlled experiment of 4 years of the dictator in office and 4 years of this guy in office. And it wasn't a dictatorship, and there wasn't, I mean, maybe I'm just sounding defensive. Maybe what I have to say about this is too common sense and it doesn't resonate with voters. But we did have a controlled experiment. It's not like when you ask, are you better off than you were 4 years ago, you're comparing yourself to another Republican. You're comparing yourself to yourself, which is a hell of a, I think, a good thing to be able to do. I have one more break. Do you have one more segment? Can I buy you one more, or do you got to run?
No, let's do it.
Good. All right. You understand the question. All right. Let me, sorry. I have a little extra equipment in the studio with me today, so I'm sorry if I'm moving a little slowly, but it looks really cool, so I'm grateful for that. George Kaloff and I will be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. George Kaloff is my guest. He's with the Resolute Group, where he serves as a managing partner, also the president of Data Orbital. We did the abortion thing in the last segment, the abortion argument in the election. Now let's do this January 6th threat to democracy thing, this concern that the Democrats are trying to implant into the American people's mind that to vote for Donald Trump is to vote for a dictator. And I guess I was just saying, and maybe it doesn't matter, maybe facts just don't matter. You had the controlled experiment. You are believing Democrats and what they are saying versus what you actually experienced with your own two eyes and ears. Is there not a diminishing return for the Democrats to stay with it, or has it worked so well and they have nothing else? They have no choice but to keep driving home as much as they can at this point.
So this one, I think, it's tougher to navigate for Democrats. Here's why. So on the issue of abortion, and a lot of polling shows this too, there's a lot of people, a high percentage of Americans, that have some sort of personal experience with it, either themselves or with someone close to them.
Sure.
How do you make the democracy argument super personal? I mean, obviously, it's personal in the sense of, like, we're all Americans, and you know, at least, you know, and I'm proud for sure, and I can speak for you too. I know we're both proud to be Americans, and you know, obviously, for me, that's an honor and a privilege because my parents, you know, came here when I was young. I wasn't born here, but it's tough to make it super personal, and so I think it's going to be difficult to animate the average voter on it. So I'm hard pressed to say this issue is worked because I don't know if it has. I think if you're a voter who believes that Donald Trump, you know, that January 6th, if this is what you believe as a voter, if you believe that January 6th was an insurrection and that Donald Trump is a threat to democracy, I don't think you voted for him in 16. I don't think you voted for the Republicans in 18. You know, you see what I'm saying? Like, I think it's been a long story of you not voting for the Republican. And so what makes it any different now? I don't know that they are adding new voters on that subject. Again, I haven't polled it in Arizona because I think it would be very difficult to sort of track that, because I really do believe it's a small percentage of the population that cites this as a top issue. I just don't think they're adding new voters. I think the issue of abortion, though, is a whole other thing, because it is it's way more talked about, and it's way more, it affects a lot more people differently than I think the subject.
I agree with your analysis 100%. And yet, I have to say, I'm still kind of seized by how much the media, your MSNBCs, you saw Meet the Press over the weekend or yesterday.
Yeah.
They didn't actually raise the issue we think might resonate more for the left, which is abortion. They're all about democracy, January 6th, and dictatorship. I mean, that really is... it's odd, but I mean, it's passionate and deep with them, it seems like.
Yeah. And you know, and you've heard me use this phrase, you know, before when we were talking, they're in a bubble. They're in the media bubble. And I don't know that the average American, I don't believe the average American, this is like the top thing that's resonating with them. They want it to. I also don't believe the average American watches, you know, we know the viewership numbers for MSNBC, watches MSNBC.
It's a beltway phenomenon, huh?
I do believe that it is, and not even just beltway, you know, bubbles. The bubble of maybe L.A., the bubble of San Francisco, parts of New York. But beltway insofar as these are people that are in the know and connected, you know, even your average, I think, Democratic voter, I don't know, in Cleveland. Is this a top issue for them? I would be shocked if it was. I feel like there's like 10 other things on their mind. Abortion, maybe, for example. I just don't know if this one is going to be in the way that folks on the left want it to be.
Well, that leads me perfectly to my next question, which is how much influence is the media worth right now to the Democratic Party? I can't find outside of Fox any fair media anymore. I just can't find it. Talk radio, but we're deliberately editorial. I just can't find it. And it's got to be worth an awful lot to them. And if so, can we beat that? You know, I don't know. On the other hand, they are losing market share, as you point out. On the other hand, I don't think anyone walking up and down the streets of Camelback or Central could tell you who the NBC or CBS or ABC Nightly News anchors are or who hosts Meet the Press. So I don't know what to think. Less people are watching it, but boy, the product they put out is unidirectional and exclusively liberal left.
It is, and you're right. No, the average person doesn't know who those hosts are in the same way that we did.
Right.
You know,
no,
back in
right,
the day.
Right. I should have said that by comparison. Right.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah. Right. As a comparison point, you know, and they are losing media share, but I think when you combine media and Hollywood and those that have the broadest viewpoint, and like, look, even social media, while it is immensely helpful because there are conservatives that have big social media presences, right? But a lot of that voice still is on TikTok, even on X, less so now, Facebook. It's still, Instagram is still from the left.
Yeah.
And so when you combine all those things together, absolutely, it's just more bifurcated. It's not that we're watching the same three or four channels. We're watching 10,000 different inputs, but still a majority of those inputs are easily center-left, if not left-wing. Now, what makes it more amazing, though, then, is when those media sources push back against Democrats, that's when you know things really have gone awry. So when you see traditional media talking about immigration in a certain way, that's when you realize, oh man, this is being paid attention to on the left as something that's a top issue right now for the average American and the average Arizonan. But I still think the percentage is still left because, again, they have, you know, it's very clear the left right now controls a large chunk of culture, but then the average person is looking at it and saying, okay, does this pass the smell test for me? And often, no, it makes no more common sense. And so that's where you have these immense divides on just rank and file issues, Seth, is that the average person is looking at what is being told to them as should be the quote-unquote truth, and they're like, I don't agree with you. This makes no sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. The credibility along with the declining viewership may be on the downswing as well. Well, George Kaloff, it's always great catching up with you and getting your insights and answers. Thank you very much.
Always good to be on with you, Seth.
All right,
talk
brother.
Soon.
We'll talk soon. I am Seth Leibson, and I'll have a concluding thought. Portions of this show brought to you by our good friends at Y Refi. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com. Or give them a call at 888-YREFI-24. They offer a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. With YREFI, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. With YREFI, there are absolutely no fees. There is no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. And, of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. And thanks to YREFI, the few tickets we do have left for our event tomorrow night, Fight for Freedom, Fighting for Freedom with Mike Gallagher, Brandon Tatum, and myself, they have underwritten the cost of it for general admissions to such a level. I don't think I'm in fact certain we have never had tickets as reasonably priced as we do for this event. We do have some left. 960thepatriot.com for those of you that would still like to attend. It'll be an awful lot of fun. Young David will be there. Young David, I'd like to keep this TV camera that's been in here all day. I've been looking at myself all day broadcasting because of a fancy technology setup. I actually like it.
You like the TV
cameras. I like the TV monitor, yeah.
I'm a little scared that you're going
well,
to...
Well, I'll tell you why,
remember
yeah.
The song? Remember the song? Video killed the radio star.
I know. And I do worry about that. But it helps me sit up straight. And I wonder if the audience would rather watch this show than just listen to it. I wonder if they'd like both.
Oh, I'd be all about that as long as we have nice long infomercials in between. And,
like that. Okay.
You know, I'll get some ad time as well. Maybe we'll have a dual-facing camera.
I think people would rather just look at you during the break than me. Kind of the duck's feet under the water, right? Good. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this afternoon. I will look forward to seeing you tomorrow night at the event at Arizona Christian University. For those of you who are going, Fighting for Freedom, 960thepatriot.com. We still have some tickets left. Mike Gallagher in town, broadcasting from Phoenix, tomorrow and the next day as a result. And he and Brandon Tatum and I will be on stage. Looking forward to all that. And if you have additional thoughts on what George and I were thinking through with regard to this election, I would certainly welcome your calls on it, as well as your questions at the event tomorrow. I think for the Republicans, the one thought I had about immigration is you can expand on it and with it. It's not just immigration. It's everything that goes with it. It goes to health care. It goes to costs. It goes to spending. It goes to education. It goes to sovereignty. It goes to drugs. And son of a gun, it goes to crime. And I think people want to talk about that, too. If they don't, we should make them. God bless you all. Until tomorrow, I'm Seth Leibson, and Class is dismissed.
Not until tomorrow, because tomorrow they're going to be at Fighting for Freedom.
There you go.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.